and welcome to episode 289 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of MI666 and Murder Road, and joining me as always, the creator of Viper and the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The creator of Atomic Hercules and various other things that he probably can't tell anyone about, and if he did, it would probably disturb you. Amazingly, which means that it's probably going to be pretty from Tribute Press later in the year. It's Tony Esmond.
Hello.
Oh, I love that hello, Tony.
I think Dan's changed his hello somehow.
Yeah, it's always changing. It's kind of constant project.
Well, how can it always be changing? It's one word.
That does it a disservice.
It's got a broad range, Vince.
All right. Let's.
I was going to spice it up by saying hello, deadbeats today, but I've already done that.
You've ruined it now.
No, yeah. You've ruined it. You've ruined everything, Dan.
I didn't say hello, deadbeats, as you know.
No, you didn't.
But hello to you all. Welcome to the show. Thank you for sticking with us already for the past 2 minutes. It's already gone off the rails, but don't worry. It's going to be back on the rails and very interesting because we're going to be talking with Sean Gabarine, writer of my favourite series of last year and a popular one with everyone here, Let's All Die, as well as Action Lab, and there's a lot of Full Moon Studios talk as well.
Yeah, I got a bit excited.
He did. Tony was just very excited to talk with someone who had worked with Full Moon Studios, aren't you?
Yeah, I was.
I would love to write a Full Moon Studios comic. This is without.
I'd be all over it like a tramp on chips.
Great analogy.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. It doesn't get better than that. But no, it's a great chat with a brilliant writer and a truly independent comic creator as well. So it's fascinating insight into all that. But that's to come. But before that, I suppose we should talk about some comic. I mean, there's not much really to talk about, is there, really?
It's been a quiet week.
I tell you where it's not quiet, though.
You know where it isn't.
Do you know where
Comic House.
It's fucking comic hell, house. How long did that take?
Jesus, Dan.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I was waiting for someone.
I mean, were you deciding which hello to
use? I was waiting for you to lead me in.
but no, I love the sponsor Comic House. Yes, they're an indie comic marketplace. If you go to comichouse.com, there's lots of different creators who have listed their books on there for free. Well, they've listed their books on there and they can start selling copies straight away. But they have a digital app, which we talk about every week. And the amount of comics that's being added to it are crazy. There's loads of good stuff on there and it's just always growing. What's on there at the moment, Dan?
There's a whole slew of excellent titles that have just been uploaded from Truthful Comics, including Project New Wave issue 1 and 2, and a favourite of Vince, Snake Claws,
yes,
issue 1, 2, yes. 4.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
So I said to Neo last week when we were talking about the comic again, I said, you really should add it to Comic House, and he has. So if you want to know what I've been talking about for a year...
All the covers homage like the Lone Wolf books with that kind of the scroll thing down the right hand side.
Yeah,
that's a lovely little touch. Nice one.
Yeah,
We've got Appalachian Assassins from Marcosia, Beowulf: The Shadow Over Innsmarch, Hollow Girl issue 2, which I'll definitely be reading. That'd be awesome. And the Galaxy Grappling Alliance issue 2 from our friend Damian Edmondson.
Cool.
Yes. There's
Solar Slam.
There's new stuff being added on there all the time. In fact, I just clicked on the what's added to the app this very weekend and thought, oh my god, there's lots of stuff I need to catch up and read on. There's some like New York Gallows and things like that. There's so much that I need to read, so that's my next week's reading done as well. So you should find out what we're talking about as well, because if you click on the comics to read the books, then money goes to the creators. It's as simple as that. You know, you sit through a little advert, pass it, get on to read a fantastic comic, and that's how we afford to buy lemon bonbons, isn't it, Tony?
Keeps the lights on in ATP Towers.
Yeah, it keeps the lights
on. And
we've
got plans. We've got big business plans. We just talked about them.
Yes. But speaking of big business, go to comichouse.com to find out more about the service and a 14-day free trial. And plus, it's only £3 a month subscription to get all of access to that enormous library. It's not changing. And when I was doing shopping for digital comics, that's quite cheap compared to what some people...
Fucking hell. Yeah, it's like one comic.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I saw someone moaning online that they had to pay £4.69 for a short anthology.
that
was me.
It is that kind of the digital pricing, which is kind of like, if you think, oh, fuck me, I've done all this work for this book, why am I only getting £4 for it? But it's the fact that it's digital and it's kind of like, yeah, it's hard to say one way or the other, but there's a definite point we think I'm paying too much for this.
Yeah, people either don't buy it or they don't pay it for long.
It's interesting checking out like the new comics released each week on, like, just say Comixology, because there's indie stuff being added all the time. And of course, that's what I'm checking out because I'm not really reading much from the big two, and
we can't get to comic shops.
And yeah, it's true. And it's fascinating to me just to do the experiment of sometimes I see the price, and I just want to see, because you can get a thumbnail preview of like the book, just to see the quality. For some of the more expensive ones, I look at the page count, and then I look at a thumbnail, and then I'll look at something that's probably a lot cheaper with a similar page count and see the quality of that book as well. If you search, it's amazing the absolutely fantastic comics you can find out there that the creators aren't charging an arm and a leg for.
Yeah, it seems to me like the smaller companies who are like, you know, working off the bare bones of their ass to get their comics out seem to be the ones that are cheaper. I mean, yeah. I know he's not a big racket. Sean is here, we're about to interview, but he's... His are quite cheap. I think his single issue is about half the price of a DC issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's the overheads of the bigger boys. They have to pay that kind of... They have to charge that kind of money for their titles.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one. I don't think we kind of... Yeah. There's a one-size-fits-all approach on it.
I mean, we've talked about it many times. I usually have a rant about it probably every 3 weeks. But we'll see. I tell you what, at the end of the year, it'd be interesting to see what the pricing situation's like in terms of digital. I'm not saying it's going to get any cheaper, but interesting to see if it rises, what does it rise to?
Yeah, I think in general terms, non-digitally, I think DC are about to hit $5 a book, aren't they? Because they're adding a backup story now, aren't they?
Fucking hell.
They're reducing their line as of in a couple of months' time, and they're adding a backup story. But then again... They've done that before. I think they did it. Do you remember that's how I think Firestorm and Airwave and all that sort of thing back in the 80s had backup stories. But I buy a book because I want to read Batman.
I'm not mad at
a backup story about, I don't know, Commissioner Gordon or something.
Five-page backup story that doesn't really add any weight at all or go anywhere.
Yeah.
It's kind of just there as like, oh, there's a dog loose. Let's bring him back. Oh, that's the end of the story.
Yeah. I mean, Superman, I buy Superman comics. They're on my pull list, but I don't really want to read a story that's just about the bottled city of Candor or something. Not
Jimmy Olsen going out for a baguette at lunch.
Jimmy Olsen and a great baguette mystery. Him on the cover just looking at a baguette going, there's no tomato in this.
You picked up the wrong one at the counter.
Oh my God, what's happened? Yeah. I'd read that if it was like the baguette that Chris Wildgoose drew me holding.
No, you don't want that. I mean, it was beautiful, Chris. What are you doing?
What kind of character in the DC universe, I'll limit to DC, could you do like a Kirby Enthusiasm style comic where they live out their life in the DC universe? Like maybe a support
character. Now, are you talking about a Joe average character rather than...
It's got to be one of the lead characters, I think, because it's easy to find a character.
I mean, I'd love to do it like Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. I think something like that would be quite funny. The Bwahaha sort of like... especially with like some of the to see almost a slice of life comedy amongst all these world ending things is always quite
fun. Ambush Bug.
I'd
do it as an ambush, like going to a just getting sillily annoyed over people.
But do you think, you know, because that's a go-to sort of comedy one, and certainly the one I've picked is a go-to.
Yeah, I suppose they both are, aren't they?
Do you think it'd be more interesting to take
it was like a Black Lightning or something, like an older character just like fucked off with everyone,
or like a new gods character? Do you know what I mean?
Give him the wrong baguette, he just fucking electrocutes.
I'd quite like Deathstroke going around, but obviously he can't ever use like any lethal skills or anything, and just people were absolutely fucking him off, and he has to bite his lip.
Yeah. I've got a not a dissimilar issue in me that I'm about to write in the next couple of weeks, which I'll tell you afterwards. It okay. might amuse you. I can't say now. Cause,
yeah. Nice, nice. Oh, I'll tell you what I did. Crazy Quilt.
Okay.
It's something fucking mental.
Well, they hire a Condiment King at a Burger King. They say, no, you're mopping the floor. Oh, what the fuck?
Yeah. You can just see Deathstroke going into like a hipster bar in, you know, Manhattan, and them saying, oh, eye patches are so this year, and he just like slices their heads off.
Yeah. What wax do you use on your moustache?
Yeah, oh. Exactly.
You want any logo on the foam? No.
Yeah. No. Oh, dear. Just give me a coffee. Yeah, yeah. What kind? Fucking hell. I think this is just basically a comic about me, isn't it? I think
yeah,
this is
yeah. kind of like this. Oh, getting wound up. God. Easily done. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Good. Anyway.
Moving on to the main event.
Yeah, the main event. Yeah, let's get stuck in with a creator that we're going to be following for the rest of the year. And we've been meaning, as Tony says, during it, we've been wanting to talk to him for quite some time.
And someone who assists in murdering my wife.
You know what? When the last issue of Let's All Die comes out, we should do like three of us
read
at the end of the show, and then all talk about it. Spoiler heavy.
Yeah.
Spoiler heavy. We can't do that, Dan.
We could do a post credit spoiler heavy 10 minute, can we?
Yeah. We should probably talk to Sean about that, see if he's okay with it.
That's true. Good point. Yeah, that's true.
But before that, here's our interview with Sean Gabarine. Right, this week we're very pleased to be joined by a writer who's worked on a lot of comics. As we've seen just by glancing at Comixology, you can see he's got comics running through his blood, as well as a series that was picked as one of our favourite series of last year, Let's All Die. Welcome to the show, Sean Gabarine. Hello, sir.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Now, we're going to talk about, obviously, your comics and Let's All Die, etc. You also
Puppet
know,
Master, we'll be getting to
oh,
that.
Oh, I was well. About to say, you're no stranger to cinematic-style comics as well. We like the Puppet Master. And how can you not want to talk to someone involved in Dole Man Kills the Full Moon universe? Now, Full Moon, for those, if you don't know Full Moon movies, people...
Just hang up now, because I'm not interested in you listening.
Why are you listening to this show?
We've only gone on about it for 5.5 years.
Yeah. But obviously, you, I mean, Let's All Die is a perfect example of this. You quite like the sort of dark side of comics with horror, but one thing I noticed that you know your stuff when it comes to horror. Is that your preferred sort of genre to write in?
Yeah, it definitely is. Horror's always been my sweet spot. I don't know, growing up when we'd go to the video store and rent movies, it was, you know, I'd always go straight to the horror section. Something about the art of the covers alone was enough to drag me in on all those, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they often promised so much, didn't they?
Yeah, they had the best covers.
Yeah.
But let's kick off with that. How did that sort of, I mean, did you ever think you'd get to write something to do with Puppet Master, for instance? I mean, I say Puppet Master, and every time I mention the name, Tony's heart skips a beat.
I love them all, man. Even the bad ones I love. Yeah.
I'm the same way. Yeah, I love that. You know, I'm on all the Facebook groups and everything, and you get the people who only like a handful of the movies, but I'm like, I could put in any one of those and just sit here and just have a smile on my face the whole time. Yeah.
And that new one, man, is just my jaw dropped during one scene in that new one. Oh, my God.
In Blade? Or
no, I haven't seen Blade yet. It hasn't made it over here.
I haven't gotten to see Blade yet either, sadly, but the remake one, yeah, that had some good stuff to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good, really good. Yeah, that it's by the geezer who did, was it Brawling? What's that movie you like?
And also,
Bone Tomahawk, and
that's it.
Yeah. Bone Tomahawk, right?
He really went for it, man. In the gore stakes, I'm surprised it made it over here without being nicked at customs. I got to I'm sure that's how videos get sent over to England now. But I've heard you say on previous interviews, Sean, that you sort of went to the Full Moon Studio stuff as a favorite. You saw that as the first studio you kind of recognized for quality or what you were looking for. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was that was definitely the first studio I started to recognize. When we, like I said, we'd go to the video store every weekend, and if we saw that Full Moon logo on a movie, that was guaranteed we were going to rent that thing. You know, yeah. So that was always our first to look for anything new with that little blue moon on it, and that would be the first thing that we'd get.
It's got a bit of a resurgence, isn't it? I mean, I know they've just remade Castle Freak as well, haven't they? There's a few that are getting.
Yeah, that's not. Oh, it's not great,
isn't it? Oh, okay.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm apprehensive of it. I want to see it because I love Castle Freak.
Yeah.
But I haven't tried that yet.
I mean, there's something. I mean, maybe it's the old man DNA in me. But sometimes when you have like the, I mean, I love indie horror movies and like people that can take no budgets and do so much with it, make it look like $10 million more. But then you have like some of these, especially shot digitally, straight to digital. They, I don't know, something about the digital makes them look a lot cheaper, or you know, the the performances just come across flatter in some kind of way. I mean, I know certainly if you watch any sort of clips of like, you know, the Full Moon stuff, sometimes it goes through the gambit of so over the top and bad, it goes back around to being amazing.
Yeah,
right.
Well, don't forget, Full Moon, I've always had that comic connection because they almost got Doctor Strange, didn't they? I think, is it Dr. Right. Mordred was almost going to be Doctor Strange? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah,
it's still quite good. Still not bad.
Right. Changed a few things in the names and the costumes and still went ahead with the movie, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Interesting. So, as I understand it, you basically, I think I've heard you say you watched all of the Puppet Master movies in one weekend and then you wrote a pitch to do the comic, is that right?
Yeah, that's how it happened, yeah. Yep. I sat down and watched through the whole series, and I mean, growing up on those movies, there were always those things that bothered me, you know, the inconsistencies, the plot hole, or you know, loose ends and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And when I did that sit down and rewatched it, it was after I'd been writing for a couple years, and I was like, you know, I really think I could do something here. And so I just dug around, found an old email address, and started, you know, writing back and forth with them to see if they'd be interested in just letting me at least pitch for it, and they were all for it.
So was that straight to Action Lab, or did you have to go through, is it Charles Band, is that his name, do you have to go through him?
Yeah,
or?
Charles Band is the Full Moon guy. Well, he basically what I did was I hit up Full Moon to see if they would license me the rights.
Okay.
To make, and I was a founding member of Action Lab. I was editor-in-chief for 10 years, and So I took it straight into Action Lab and was like, look, this is what I want to do. I want to bring this book in. Are we cool with that? And everybody was happy to do it. So,
well, I have to say, that's a great series, man. You sort of continue it, don't you, really?
Yeah. Really? Yeah, that's right. I didn't want to do retellings of everything that was already there. I thought that the mythology was already established well enough that there was plenty of material to work with and expand on.
Yeah, I think I reviewed it on here, I'm going to say about 2 years ago, guys, and one scene still sticks with me. It's where Blade swings on the geezer's lower eyelid.
Yeah, I remember you graphically talking about that.
Yeah, that actually, and that's funny, because that was part of what I used in the sample script to send to the couple artists we were looking for to do it. Was that whole like two-page scene where he jumps up and hooks onto the eyelid and does the throat slit from there? Yeah, it was that was part of the sample script. So I have that by a few different artists, which is pretty slick.
Oh, nice. So was it a sort of almost a little bit of a test of art, but also, are you willing to go this far? Is it a bit of that?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. Definitely.
Good. It's a great series, man. Really enjoy it. Yeah.
I mean, I think that speaks to, you know, I think it's a good idea for writers who, you know, are farming out scripts to certain artists and stuff. Take the important scene. Take something that is like, right, if they can nail this, I'm confident they'll be able to nail
everything else. They
understand. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which, a hook for an eyelid, of course.
there are plenty of amazing artists I've talked to over the years that I'd like to do something with, but it just doesn't quite suit the story that I'm working on at the time, you know. It's just a matter of pairing it up right,
especially with horror itself. We've spoken about the genre many times on this show, but you know, it's mixing the right kind of visceral with also, I mean, sometimes it can be over the top sort of exploitive sort of artwork, which is, that goes too far. I think the good horror artwork hits that fine balance in between the two. Mm-hmm. I think.
I mean, that's why I keep going back with Michaela whenever I'm starting something new. There's so many of my properties that I bring Michaela in to do the artwork with me, because she just personally, like I've said it before, I view her art style as like just left of realistic.
Yeah. Okay.
It's realistic enough that the gore works, but it's not so realistic that it looks phony.
Yeah, I don't think the photorealism will work with a lot of your stuff. You're right. It's definitely. Right.
Yeah. And this is, for those that know, this is Michaela DeSarco, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Who's the artist of Let's All Die, which is, that's a perfect fit. I can totally understand why that's an artist that you go to.
But you've stuck with Full Moon over a number of series, haven't you? Did you write some of Oblivion as well, is that right?
I did editing for Oblivion. Like when we did the Puppet Master series through Action Lab, we also brought in a few of their other properties just to try them out and see if people took to them. And we brought in other writers and artists to do those. So we had Tim Seeley, who did it was for Hackslash and that kind of stuff. He wrote the Oblivion mini that we did. But I oversaw that. I organized the artists and the writers and all that stuff.
Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. So I mean, that's a much forgotten movie as well. That's a great little sort of pre-digital effects movie, isn't it? Which is great fun. Well, I think there's two of them, isn't there? I think two Oblivion movies.
There's two of them. Yeah. And it's a good comic book tie-in too, because it was written by Peter David, the original movies.
Ah, right. Because I know he wrote Trancers 5 as well, didn't he? Which we often laugh about. No, Trancers 3.
Is that the one with the horse on the cover?
There was something later in there, yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. And you also wrote the Full Moon Universe series. It's a mini series, isn't it?
The Dollman Kills the Full Moon Universe, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
something that I pitched to them as well, and I was like, they wanted to do something to introduce people to their universe, to all their messed up little corners of it, and I was like, well, then doing a crossover kind of thing with that continuing arc through it, where we get to all these different strange little properties they have, and having the 13-inch tall space cop being the one connecting it all, I thought was great.
Yeah.
So they jumped on it.
It works so much better for me, and I think it does that whole, the WTF is this kind of angle, isn't it? I mean, because you get the big two, yes, Punisher kills whatever this week, or Deadpool is killing this universe, whatever, blah blah blah. We all know what that is, and Dollman Kills the Formula. That was I had to stop in my tracks and go, pardon?
Yeah, I got in a row with my comic shop over that, because they didn't get my second issue in. I'd shouted at them until they got it in.
It's something about the Full Moon crowd that when you're passionate about it, you're really passionate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But of course,
I'm very thankful that they've enjoyed what I've done with it, because they are that crowd.
Yeah.
Quite good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I mean, you're obviously, you've got vast experience as an editor as well. How's the difference between straight up editing a book and a writer? Which sounds like a stupidly simplistic question, but are you moving more into just straight writing now after a long time of editing?
I'm mostly writing right now. Yeah, I'm happy to do some editing if I have like a friend who needs something, or if I find a project that really appeals to me that I want to jump in and do, then I'm happy to do it.
Yeah.
I think editing is pretty important, because it, sometimes when all you do is write, you get it in your head how you want this story to go, and you I want this scene to happen this way, and that's great. But sometimes somebody looking at it from the outside is going to see that, if you tweak this slightly, it'll work better. If you put this, this comment before that scene happens, it's going to make a lot more sense. And it's that kind of stuff that just an extra set of eyes looking at it from a different position really helps out.
Yeah.
I mean, is that why you moved on to, or as part of your work is this Handwritten Entertainment, which is, I'm guessing, is your own company, is it now?
It is. Yeah. And it's nothing big. It's just basically it's my excuse to make comics that I want to make that I don't think are really direct market books. Like, right. You know what I mean?
I don't know. That's all. Yeah.
it's got that suicide side to it. You got Shark Squatch. That's not to me a direct Morgan book. So this is just my way to make comics.
And the shame that it's not. The absolute shame that
they they both should fucking be. Yeah. What is that? So how long has that been a project for, Sean? Is it something that's reasonably recent? Is it
reasonably recent? Yeah, it's maybe like I think I started the first issue of Shark Squatch. I think I did in at the end of 2018, something like that.
So, okay,
you know, it's still fairly fresh.
So what's the model for that? Is it print on demand or is it digital only, or is there physical copies, or how are you going about it?
I've got digital up on Comixology, and I do physical copies. Basically, I have I worked in graphic design for a newspaper for 15 years, and when I was doing that, I developed like good relationships with a lot of local printers. So I have local guys that I like to support. So I'll go to them, print up a batch of like 100 copies of an issue, and then sell through those at shows and online and stuff, and then go back to them, get another 100 printed up. You know what I mean? So it's quality on demand, I guess, but it's
kind of similar to our model for the small press in indie over here. Right, that's kind of what we do. We have like three or four printers that we go to, and we know them. I mean, often on a personal basis, you know, and we print up enough, and then we go back to them for the second 100, and you know, that sort of thing. Very similar, actually. Mm. Yeah.
So,
because I know that you've done quite a few shows in the past, haven't you? I'm guessing Angry Gnome, which is your is that an old project? Is it that?
It is. I mean, like we talked about before we even started recording, my last name, Gabarine, it's not the easiest to pronounce when you try to just read it. So when I was starting to do comics, I didn't want to just use just my name. So my wife and I sat and we were trying to kick something around and decide, because when we started, I was writing and she was drawing the book.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So it just popped into, I don't even remember which one of us threw it out first, but we just decided to go with Angry Gnome Comics. We thought it was something that would stick in your head when you hear it. So for our first, like, probably 5 years worth of publishing books, it was Angry Gnome Comics, yeah. Then I moved into Action Lab, and now I'm doing handwritten.
Nice. So you did the whole grind of doing conventions and traveling about and that sort of thing, did you? Or?
Yep. Yeah. Definitely did a good bit of that. I mean, that's one really cool thing about the association I had with Action Lab was I got to do San Diego Comic Con, I got to do New York Comic Con, which are both amazing shows, like the hubs of pop culture at this point, with at least over here. So that was really cool to get to experience those a bunch of times.
Okay, have you ever done any UK or European conventions? Or
I have not. I would love to. It's just a matter of you know, the financially getting there
and viruses, let's face it.
That slows down a lot of my
did you want to move on to Let's All Die, because I know it's something you want to talk about a bit, don't you?
Well, I mean we could talk all day with Sean about Action Lab, but certainly that was a big thing on my radar for a long time.
Regularly featured on the show, didn't it?
Discovering that, I think I first discovered that, is it Comic Geek Speak? When I was back in the day, you know, Action Lab were just coming up, and I've just seen them grow and grow and grow over the years. So immediately I was on the same wavelength as Sean. And then this book came about, Let's All Die, because Tony
recommended it.
I think I just found it on, just I was sort of surfing, you know, when you're off and you got a day off and you just can't find anything worth reading, and I suddenly came across that. I can't remember, you know, I was down a rabbit hole of Comixology. I think I found it that way. Yeah.
I think I remember you talking about it on 11 o'clock comics.
That's right. Yeah, I mentioned it there, didn't I? That's right. Yeah.
And then I actually bought it live on the show as you were recommending it. And like you say, it's a book that has a lot of things going on because, you know, it's got the classic, you know, the slasher camp sort of vibe, but with a beautiful, very dark spin on it, with the whole sort of suicide angle and things like that. I mean, how did this story come about? Because, you know, we talk about there are horror, you know, there are horror films or comics and stuff that clearly have a love for the genre and put a spin on it. You know, you take a Cabin in the Woods sort of thing, and it, you know, it takes a spin on it. It takes everything you know and looks at it from a different angle. And this, to me, felt like one of those sort of everything you think you know about these sort of stories, this is something different. How did the idea come about?
Well, I've had, like, whenever I'm going to do a new genre, I like to make it something different. You know what I mean? I don't want to go in and tell the exact same story. And slashers have always been my favorite horror subgenre. That's what hooked me when I was a kid, and it's stuck with me till now. I mean, I was just, the past couple of days, I've watched through, let me see here, what was it? Bloody Murder 1 and 2 and Junior, which are like super low budget, super, you know, not the best movies, but they're, you know, early 2000s.
Just to clarify, we're not talking the Arnold Schwarzenegger being pregnant film.
well, that's a pretty bad, horrible film. Yeah. No. That's a different kind of horror. Also,
like,
yeah.
I think it's got a second title that's like Engine Trouble or something like that. That's what you'll find on IMDb as. But so I've always liked that kind of stuff, but I didn't want to do just the same story. And the main slasher idea I've had for a while is just called Part 37. And it just would jump in at a Part 37 of a slasher franchise,
yeah,
and just be sort of a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing. And yeah. I was trying to decide, well, after 37, why would they still be going there? And it's like, they'd either have to be super stupid or want to die. And when I clicked on that want to die part, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm not wasting that on a comedy thing. That's got some good dark tones to it. Mm-hmm. So I took that and reworked it into Let's All Die.
Because it's got layers in it where these people are very damaged, don't they? There's an element of sort of PTSD thing going on, isn't there?
Right.
Yeah, which makes it more interesting than the sort of straightforward slasher, you know, holiday camp story, because you don't know what their motivation. Their motivations play constantly on your mind, don't they?
Right.
And
yeah, I mean, to get to that point, I think you have to have, there has to be something more to it than, hey, I'm just going out to a cabin for a weekend. You know what I mean? There has to be something more to get you to this point.
And it does. Yeah. It does an interesting thing that you know, many slasher stories try and fail at. And it might be because of the angle you've taken. It makes you immediately care about each individual character in its own way. Whether you're trying to figure out, do they have an ulterior motive? But at the end of the day, you know, these are not all cookie-cutter characters, even when they get mashed.
I'm constantly suspicious of everyone in it, because I think there's something going on that you can't see.
We've discussed it, haven't we? What we think's going on. So we're really interested to see how it plays out.
Because the big turning point is when the woman arrives who isn't part of the group, and you're either, she's an absolute utter victim, or she's the power behind it. You know, she's the motivator behind it. There's that interesting, which I know you haven't had the last issue out. Is the next issue the last one?
The next issue is the last one.
Oh, do you know, we're not going to ask for any spoilers. There's going to be no spoilers. Actually, about the series as it is, we're not going to tell you what's going to happen in the book, because the joy of a book like this is actually sort of reading it, even if it's just to go, oh, fuck, that hurts.
That's the thing with this book, and that's why we enjoy it, I think, so much. One is, it's not a lot of mini series. Everything happens in the first issue. All the ideas are thrown in, and then it's a sort of long walk till you get to the event at the end of the fourth one, you know, or even the sixth one. But this one, you keep adding layers. There's something, I reread issue 3 today, and there's something that happens in that that's almost got like a pseudo religious thing going on. I don't want to say the word, because it's going to ruin it. But
yeah,
the thing that girl does, I think, oh right. Wow, right, okay.
Yeah.
Right. A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's all you can tell, he wants to talk about it, because he loves it. I mean, another thing, with horror as well, it's the kills. You know, they're always a massively important part of it. I mean, it sounds twisted when you say it, but we love the kills in a horror movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I watch like the.
I love a hammer, mate. Love a hammer.
Yeah. Yeah. The Dead Meat channel, who does a kill count and stuff, I watch their videos just to see like the cool kills that happens in horror movies and stuff. And you have some particularly nice ones. That makes me sound like a sociopath saying that. You might have
imaginative.
Imaginative. Yeah. I mean, I think it's the end of issue 2, Tony, if I'm correct.
Does it involve a lake, that bit?
Yes. Yeah. It might be, I think, one of the most inventive and terrifying death.
Yeah, freak me out. Freak me the fuck out. And also for the fact the bloke looks a bit like me.
So what we're going to say is, do you have a list, and do you need to speak to someone? Do you need help?
Do you come up with the ideas? Have you got a little black book of, oh, I'd love to kill someone like this, and then you can rework, you know, it's like...
I, I've got a couple books. It's, you know, it goes back to why I wrote this kind of story in the first place, is I wanted to do something different. And growing up on these movies, I've seen so many kills that when I can think of something new, it gets written down, and it sits there till I find the right home for it. You know what I mean? There's, there's
never let the police raid your house, Sean. If the police do raid, explain it immediately. Yeah,
I'm hopeful that I have enough other stuff in my Google history that suggests writer that I'm okay.
Yeah. That's the tightrope of being a horror writer, isn't it? Is it like, well, I need to research this stuff.
You know, you Google, you know, how long can you live without skin? And, you know, that you got to think you're put on some kind of list with that.
Yeah. You're not lying. I sent a comic. I think we're all responsible for this sort of Google history. I sent a comic to a friend of ours, Jason McNamara, who does horror books as well out your way. And he wrote back and said, am I on a list now for reading this, Tony? That was his reply. So I thought I might put on the back of the next issue, to be fair.
Yeah.
What sort of thing do you enjoy to read? Is there anything, any comics that you're digging or any novels that you dig as well that help your art, make you a better writer maybe?
Well, personally, I mean, anytime if I get stuck with writing or anything, I go back to Lock and Key, American Vampire, Preacher, any of those three. If I'm stuck, any of those three just kicks me right back in.
Oh, nice. I haven't read the new American Vampire, but I hear good things about it. I must catch up.
Yeah, it's been really good so far. Yeah, this new story arc, I mean, picks right back up with it. The characters all sound like the characters still. The art's still amazing.
Oh, good.
Raphael Albuquerque, he's an artist I would love to do something with eventually. If I can get great. That I can get there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, cool. Have you pitched to any of the, let's call them bigger, larger companies or anything like that?
I have a little bit, but never anything seriously. I have a couple of books in the works now that I'm gonna try that route with, but it's, you know, especially with the pandemic right now, it's a very difficult time to pay artists. Holding on, making commitments right now till we get through all this.
Agreed.
That's fair. I mean, with that being said, obviously, you know, staying creative and keeping that sort of enthusiasm going can be quite difficult at times. I know it's certainly been, you know, with the world being what it is, it's sometimes I can just suck all the joy out of everything. So anyone that can then churn out comics during these times is, you know, they're heroes. I mean, three issues of Let's All Die came out last year, wasn't it? It was all in 1 year, wasn't it, last year?
Yeah, I think so.
So I mean that in itself, with like small press or independent publishing, is a fantastic feat anyway. But you know, what do you do to get yourself in a mindset like when you sit down to write, you know, what do you what's your setup? You know, do you have films on in the background? Do you have music?
Are you a strict 9-to-5 guy, or do you just wait for the muse to hit?
Well, with everything over here right now, my daughter's doing, you know, work from school from home.
Right.
So I usually help out with that till we do lunch, you know, 11:30, 12 o'clock, and then I just take my laptop, go upstairs for a while, and I can sink in pretty quick usually. I'll usually read through like the last couple pages I wrote and then can continue on from there. I don't like distractions when I'm writing, so I don't do music or movies or any of that stuff. But when I'm doing, if I'm doing like the design work side of it, like, you know, laying out covers, building the books, that kind of stuff, then I'll have a movie playing on my phone right below the screen, or I'll have on a podcast or some, you know, some music or something.
Yeah, it's a different kind of mindset, isn't it? I mean, I'm the same. Like when I'm designing or doing any artwork or anything like that, it's, you know, just put on Spotify or a YouTube or something in the background. But yeah, you really, writing's a different mindset, isn't it? You need to. I can't imagine sort of writing and listening to an album that's got lyrics, because I'll just end up typing the lyrics.
Yeah, I can't. I can't write if there's porn on. I can't.
That's why you find it so troubling, Tony, to write.
Yeah, maybe. So I'm blocked today. I've just watched too much porn again.
Oh, God. And that was the moment the guest left.
Is there any, if you don't mind, Sean, I'd like to go back to Full Moon. Is there any Full Moon properties that you'd still love to, because I've got a couple I'd like you to write. Are there any that you'd still like to have a go on?
Yeah, I mean, we touched a little bit on Demonic Toys. I'd love to do some more with that. Dr. Mordred, I think there's so much we could do with that. Like, I've wanted to do, because Mordred has been, on Earth for 200 years, something like that. So I'd love to take like Mordred versus Radu back in like medieval times. Something like that would be fantastic. So there's a lot of different properties they have that I'd still love to play more in.
Yeah, I'm bearing in mind the Full Moon Studios comic product properties have been at a number of companies, haven't they? Even before Action Lab, they were. I'm trying to remember the name, wasn't it? It wasn't AP, was it? There was someone else had them.
I'm trying to remember what it's called.
But I don't think there's been a Dr. Mordred comic, is there?
I don't think there was. I don't think, not that I'm aware of anyway. I don't think there's been a solid book. We touched on it a little bit in Dollman Kills the Full Moon Universe, but that's the only one that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Do you think with something like that, an issue with Doctor Strange would come up in terms of publishing, or do you think Mordred has become enough of its own thing now?
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit like Squadron Supreme and stuff like that. It's kind of gone on so long. If they could have, they should have already, you know.
Yeah.
It's more of playing off of the archetype by this point, or at least how I would do it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I was thinking more of the sort of giant robot stuff, so the Crash and Burns or the Robot Wars or the Robo Jocks, that sort of thing.
Without interest from writers wanting to do those for sure. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. They were great. They were a bit stop clip animation, weren't they? But they were pretty good otherwise. They seemed to my young brain to be pretty good. Yeah.
I used to love Robot Jocks. Well, after rewatching it, it's a bit like, come on, get to the action. You want more robot fights?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is what comics can do.
Yeah,
exactly.
No budget when it comes to big robot fights.
Yeah, comics can get over the budgetary constraints that... I'm saying the Full Moon didn't have a big budget, of course.
They had some great, VHS covers. Let's put it that way. Yeah, yeah. The Mandroid. It's more impressive on the cover, I'm trying to remember now. Was Arena with Claudia Christensen, was that a Full Moon or was it not? I can't remember.
I don't remember that one. I'm not sure.
That's really this like Rocky in space, isn't it?
That's the one. He has to fight all these different monsters and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it wasn't the Full Moon. Okay. Because they kind of had a few identities, haven't they? Full Moon. Aren't they a streaming channel now that you can get through your Fire Stick or something like that? I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. They have their own streaming service, which is honestly pretty awesome. Because it's like. Their entire catalog from all their different brands they've had over the years. Anything new they do goes right on there. And then they license some stuff to put on there. Like they have, at least last time I was really digging through it, they had like Gates of Hell and Amsterdamed.
Oh, and I love that film.
CNS Pop and that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
I mean, they've got a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah. Oh, cool. And you've got all the newer stuff, haven't you? You've got this sort of, is it Evil Bong and Ginger Dead Man and all this sort of thing? They've done a few of them now, haven't they? Yeah,
they've done a bunch of those. So that's, you know, that, and I, hey, you know, that if that works for them, that's great. It's not my Full Moon. It's not what I go for. I prefer the, you know, like Puppet Master, Subspecies, Trancers.
Yeah.
Subspecies is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Subspecies is a sort of slightly erotic. And then suddenly you get these sort of stop clip animation, claymation creatures walking across.
Yeah,
right.
Yes, genius.
The vampire villain though, got such a sort of iconic look to him, hasn't he?
That was a good comic. I was reading that for a while as well. That's good. Mm. I'm not sure if it's still going, but pretty good.
I'm sure there's lots of creators out there who, you know, you've managed to do something that a lot of comic creators. I mean, we've all probably got things in our head that's like, oh, I'd love to take that old B movie or some franchise or some license that no one cares about, or you think no one cares about, until you want the rights. You know, and surely there's probably quite a few indie people out there thinking, oh, how would I go about that? You know, what is the best way to, not step by step of how to get the rights, but when it comes to those sort of titles where you're trying to get rights to do a book, is it just communicating direct with the people themselves? I mean, there must be so many hurdles and hoops you have to go through.
I think I got pretty lucky with it being Full Moon because it's a relatively small thing and they own all their stuff. So I really didn't have to deal with, this guy wrote it and claims he has the rights, and then this company put it out and they have the rights, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was able to go straight to the source and just talk right to them. So I think I think with a lot of properties, it'd be hard to track down who exactly is the person you need to go through.
Mm. Especially with certain comics, you know. I mean, we've all got the comics that we loved when we were kids and stuff. Some of them are probably obscure.
Long out of date, books. Yeah.
But when it comes to publishing, you know, you've got artists and you've got writers and the publishing house that are probably sticklers for it. But, you do hear, when it comes to, like, the movie side, I know... like the company Vinegar Syndrome and people like that, they find these weird obscure horror movies that it's literally like one person owns the right, the director still has a copy of it in his basement, and they've contacted them directly.
There's a lot of martial arts movies like that as well, aren't there? A lot of the Bruceploitation and that sort of New Guinea kind of kung fu movies. There's a lot of that going on as well. There's a lot of room for all this.
Yeah,
I suppose with Full Moon though, did you go straight to Charles Bandage? He's quite interactive. I've spoken to him on Facebook and stuff a couple of times.
Have you?
I didn't go straight through him. I went through their. I don't recall what his title was. It was something with like media director or something like that. And he's who I went through and got to Charlie through him, and we worked everything out from there. That was like mind blowing to be like, send out this request just to see if they'd even talk to me about it. They're like, oh yeah, sure. Let's get on a call with Charlie, this day at this time. I'm like, oh, okay, sure, yeah. like my earliest movie rentals were his movies, and now I'm going to be jumping on the phone to pitch ideas to him. I'm like, Jesus, okay, yeah, let's do that right out of the gate. All right.
He used to do sort of video bits, didn't he, for the films? He'd do like sort of intro segments and stuff, didn't he? Which are pretty good. Videos, I think you can find them.
It was like the extra features you'd get on a DVD when they were first starting. And this was before any of that. Anybody was even doing anything like that. Full Moon was doing the Video Zone. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Do you think you'll go back to Puppet Master at all? Is there any plans to?
I think right now they want to let it breathe a little bit. As a comic franchise, because we did 25 issues at Action Lab, and then when everything went back to Full Moon, I got to do a little bit of Puppet Master with the Dollman Kills series, and so they kind of want to just give it some space, and then hopefully
that's
we'll
a good
jump
that's
back
a good run for a horror book. It's rare that you get that, and especially with that consistency of you writing them all. I think that's great, man. It's great. You can find they're sort of split up into trades on Comixology, but they make an excellent read. They really do.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean that was the goal, right? Was to pay tribute back to what got me into horror in the first place, and that was one of the major properties that did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me you've got some of those really expensive action figures of Blade and stuff. Yeah.
I don't yet. No.
No, I don't either.
I said yet. Did you notice there was the yet?
Yeah.
It's kind of sad that I don't, but I have like the nice Pinhead statue, and I have like the half-sized Blade figure that they did. The new NECA Puppet Master figures they have coming out in March look amazing.
Oh, right. I'll get on that.
They're like, I don't know, like 6 or 7 inches tall, but they're like super detailed. They have all the old accessories that were from the first, run of Puppet Master toys back in the 90s. Right. Just updated versions of those. They're really nice looking.
Oh, so good. They're such classic designs. I used to get excited when they'd add a new character, when they had a new one would appear and stuff. Yeah. Oh man, so good.
So right. What lies in the future then? Obviously, you know, you found out. Are there any genres? I mean, without obviously your work, you've got new projects in the pipeline. Are you still staying within the horror genre? Are you mixing it up with some sci-fi, some superheroes? I don't know, martial arts, maybe a romance book.
I've done a little superhero when I first started. I'd like to do more with that, but I just haven't gotten a chance to. My next
was that Fracture? Was that Fracture?
Yeah, it was Fracture. Yeah. So I've got more horror stuff on the in the lines here. I have a sci-fi book I've been working on for a while that I'm just trying to nail down an artist for. That I think should be. I think it's going to be a good story. That's about where I'm comfortable right now, is the horror and the sci-fi. I have horror.
Yeah. Oh, well, You're speaking my language.
There's a lot of artists. I'm really focused on right now.
Oh,
so.
Now you really spoke my language. Fucking now, important question: bipedal,
yeah,
or on all fours?
This is the story, not
they're the sort that would travel on all four, but bipedal if they need to be.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the preference here?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm more the Howling than the American Werewolf, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, I get it.
So you don't mind them being in dinner jackets and stuff, but with furry heads?
What, me?
Is there any particular werewolf comics you've liked, Sean, that are you basing it on, or are you using as, you know, homage or anything?
See, most of my references or influences come from movies, because that's,
you find
that's
that with horror writers a lot, actually. With horror comics, it tends to be the one that we, the movie is the go-to rather than the comic often.
And I don't quite know why that is, but that's just, maybe it's because that's what I had access to sooner.
Yeah.
So that helped form my opinion of them. But I'm trying to think of, I haven't read too many werewolf comics. Cursed was really good. It's not associated to the Wes Craven movie.
Yeah. The one I remember was with Avatar, Ferals. Have any of you read that?
Okay, yeah, I've not read it, but I know of it, yeah.
Lapham, Ferals.
What's the Kirkman one?
I don't know. The astounding Wolfman, you've got the
Marvel series as well, which is good, you know.
Yeah, that was very good.
Feral's is a brutal book though. Yeah, I think with werewolves, your take on werewolves, is it full on, you know, you're going straight for the jugular?
Sort of. Mm-hmm. I'll give you the title of the book, at least at this point, but with the working title, we'll see if it stays, is This Little Piggy.
Okay.
Oh, right, okay.
Like a folk horror thing, or?
It's still modern, but it sort of harkens back. It's like a family traditional kind of thing playing out in modern times. So I don't want to go too much into it. But,
I'm already sold.
And that's, the generational is kind of where the bipedal versus quadrupedal, I guess.
Yeah.
Come, because when you have somebody who's new to it, they're still going to be staying up as much as possible, doing the whole what they're used to walking around. When you get somebody who's generations into this, they're more animalistic, more down on all fours, more doing their thing. You know.
Mm.
You know.
Interesting.
I'm so glad nobody said Twilight during that.
Oh Jesus!
Didn't even consider that.
No one does. no offense to Twilight fans.
But fuck them.
Oh dear. I'm completely sold on that already. To take my money, even if the title changes. And like I say, Let's All Die is due out hopefully
next month, you said,
February, March time, we'll be looking at it.
Awesome.
Yep, that sounds about right.
I mean, it's independent comics, so if it's a little bit earlier, it's wonderful. If it's a little bit later, then so be it. We're fine with it. I think that's part of the joy of indie comics as well. That, I mean, yeah. I think I want to say a little bit more patient, but am I crazy in thinking
Well,
that?
You say that, but you put 3 issues out last year, and Valiant couldn't even manage that, could they? So I think you're doing all right, man.
Don't fire the shots on this episode, Tony. Don't. Actually, we love Valiant.
Apparently.
Yeah. So, we're looking forward to, you know, anything that you put out, Sean. So keep us posted on it all.
I definitely will.
Yeah. Where can people, like, find you and your books and, you know...
And you.
And continue the conversation with what you got coming up.
Well, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. It's all... Sean Gabarine, GABBORIN. I have a website URL. I'm in the process of getting it built. So right now, the best thing to do is if you search my name, I'm the only Sean Gabarine. Or you can search Handwritten Entertainment. That'll take you to my online store for now. As soon as I get my website finished and up, I'll be sure to let everybody know that too. But
nice. For now, those are the. So you're not working with Action Lab? Have you sort of transitioned away from them, have you? Or
yeah, I stepped away from that.
Okay, good. But their books that you've written are still available on Comixology. I recommend all of them, actually. Yeah, really good.
And just for our lovely listeners, before we let you go, is there anything you're reading at the moment that you'd like to recommend to our lovely listeners, just quickly?
Let's see. Like I said earlier, American Vampire, I think, is a fantastic continuation of it. That's top of my pile. The Lock and Key Sandman crossover starting soon, so yeah. I'm excited for that.
Oh wow,
that's going to be money in the bank, nice. Isn't it? For that,
do you know what? I hadn't know that American Vampire had come back. That's a series I need to read more of.
It's great, man. I got the hardbacks a few Christmases ago. Yeah, really good. Mm. Yeah,
yeah. So there you go, folks. Go follow Sean. Go, I mean, for God's sake, read all his books. Because they're crazy good. And thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, big thrill, man. Yeah, we love your work. Yeah. We've been talking about your work for years, man. It's really good. Yeah.
I really do appreciate it. I mean, especially in indie comics, it's really nice to have people spread the word for you, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all about paying it forward.
Right.
Oh, no.
I know, that sounded really cheesy, didn't it? But I genuinely meant it.
Good.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, thanks, guys.
There you go, folks. Another creator to add up, follow, and grab all the books. And if you haven't read Let's All Die and the Puppet Master series, then you really should.
Yeah, good fun.
Yeah, which is, and we're always about good fun on this show because that's what comics needs very, very much, and just everything in general with the world being what it is. But
there's some cracking writing going on with that dude there. Yeah. He knows what he does. He knows how to do it around horror, and that's what I think is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, he goes for it as well. I think there's too much safe horror out there at the moment, and he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
I think he was right about that thing where people have a concept of, like, a really high concept, and then they fucking blow their wad in the first issue.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you're just spinning your wheels now till the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something at the beginning, and it's like... at the front, but nothing in the middle.
And then, every issue that turns your head in a different way. That one,
And obviously, it's not in the interview, but we had a short chat afterwards, a spoiler heavy chat because we wanted to talk about the book with him, and he revealed some details about like some characters and some foreshadowing.
It was callbacks, genius. Yeah,
absolutely
good.
Genius. Mm. So, be interested to see if any of the listeners pick up on that when they read it.
I love all that foreshadowing stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of times, like in film, especially Kubrick stuff, like I've kind of gone back to appreciate, like, when people break stuff, Kubrick stuff, Danny, like, fuck me, he's foreshadowed that right at the front of the fucking film.
And there's nothing to stop you discovering something as you're writing page 20 and thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if I mentioned that on page 5? You can go back in a script and change stuff. That's what I do quite a lot.
Definitely, yeah.
I think if he's got to be doing this, and he had to have done that, and there's got to be some indication of it earlier, so you can go back and add stuff previously. I think that's always a good idea.
And it doesn't even have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be plot breaking things. It can just be like little details. that someone says that, yeah, you know,
they could there's be... gone.
Sorry. No, you go on, Dan.
There's a guy I watch occasionally on YouTube called Rob Ager, and he breaks down films of all different genres. Mm. And there's one where he breaks down the tech noir scene in Terminator, and like, you've got the metal fences, the spotlights, there's sirens going off, and the music's going on about "You've Got Me Burning," and it's a callback to the future that humanity's going to be in.
Yeah,
concentration right, camps. Sort of thing. And you're like, fucking hell. Obviously, that was Cameron did that on purpose.
Yeah. It's like it's a bit like real life. When I was watching the Trump rally the other day, and before he arrived, some cunning DJ was playing "Memories" through the speaker, and that did make me laugh quite a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about politics because that will date the show instantly.
Yes.
and something that should always be timeless is comics. And we've got now we're on to the shout-outs, but we've got an extra bit of it. Audio for you as well this week, but before we get onto that, do we have any other shout outs, gents?
I got a couple.
Go for it.
So the Drink and Draw, another great one, guys.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, nice combination of laughs and talking about art and
there was a lot of a lot of fantastic sort of art books shown as well. There was a lot of love for, you know, some fantastic artists from the past, and you know, beautiful sort of stuff. And big thanks to Tom Curry at This Chucklehead.
Yeah.
Cheers, and Tom. Creator Skelly Bob. There you go. There's another fiver for the coffer.
Tom's got the keys to the Facebook page now as well. So it won't just me be banning people. It'd be him as well.
He can do a bit of banning.
Yeah. So as always, he's a legend for putting these things on. And we're discussing some you know, some fun things with the Drink and Draw for later on in the year and stuff. So we've got
definitely
got some extra ideas as well. So brilliant time was had by all, I think.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. I had a really good time. I was absolutely knackered. I've been up for like 4 days or something at that point.
Yeah,
2 days.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
It's the only thing that kept me going into the evening. But the other thing, I've got a couple other things to mention, if you don't mind, guys. So Steve Lytle. Steve Lytle was one of my favourite artists on Legion and Doom Patrol and some other books, and he did some X-Men stuff and some Flash. And he sadly passed away far too early. He was only in his 60s and he passed away this week. There's a GoFundMe. You go just go to GoFundMe and look up Steve Lytle, LIGHTLE, which is going to help with the funeral costs. And bearing in mind it was lockdown, he was kind of the main incomer, you know, making the main income for the household. So it's difficult times for his poor wife and his family. But an absolutely brilliant artist who just carried every story. And this time last year, I read through his Legion work again. Just when Legion went direct market, he did that series there from the death of Karate Kid onwards, and just genius, lovely stuff. It's a real shame. The other one is my website is up and running. If you have any books you want to send me to review, just digital copies only, because it makes it easier for the review. It's neverironanything.com, and if you go to the submissions page, there's an email, or you can submit straight through the site. There you go.
There you go. Nice. Dan, have you got any shout-outs?
Yeah, so we're going to give a shout-out to the self-portrait drawing activity we've got going on. On Monday, the deadline's on Monday, 25th February, January even. You can draw a self... So we're looking for a self-portrait in any style, any medium. We'll put up a thread on the day, and you just post up the picture of you on the thread. I know some of you have already been...
Yeah, it's quite busy still, isn't it? It's already quite busy, yeah.
Yeah. So, top work.
Nice. And just a shout-out to our boys at That Comic Smell, who sent us through a copy of their first foray into anthologies recently, which will be coming out soon. So thank you. We're looking forward to checking that out.
Them and John Tucker. There's some panels on the website, actually, if you go and have a look. Yeah. I'll put some stuff up there. It's looking good, isn't it? And the thing about it, I think, is it's got that real sense of mates making a comic, which is something we did, didn't we?
Yeah.
And and you really, it really comes back off it, I think, you know.
Yeah, very much so. So follow them at That Comic Smell, and listen to That Comic Smell anyway. It's just a great show. And speaking of greatness, back to us. No, we've got an extra bit of audio for you. Tony, do you want to key it up?
Rich Sheaf, he's a kind of friend you want. He donated to a charity and suggested that we interview a friend of his because he thought, you've interviewed me enough. He says, why don't you do a friend? So he's recommended Dave Brown. Dave being an old friend of ours for many years, we've known Dave. Issue 7 of Shaman Kane is in the works at the moment, and issue 6 has just come out, and he's kindly given me an issue 5 and 6 to do a little bit of a competition giveaway at the end of this interview. But it's a sort of 10-15 minute chat with Dave and just where he's up to at the moment. Okay, welcome to another ACP fundraiser interview. Now, I'd like to point out before I introduce our guest is that Richard Sheaf is the kind of buddy you want, because he messaged me and said, if I donate, I think because Richard and I have done a couple of interviews recently, he thought he'd donate to a charity and get a buddy of his. And it turned out to be a buddy of mine as well. So I'm over the moon. And it's a guy who I've collaborated with at Warn a couple of times, actually. We'll have to work it out in a minute. But it's Dave Broughton. Hey, Dave. Hey, man. All right.
Hey, Tony. Nice to chat to you, mate.
Yeah, good. Now, you've been a pal of the pod for years, haven't you? You've been... God, you... I think first interview... Did we interview you in the bar at Bristol or something like that? I think seem to remember.
Yeah, I think I had a pretty long day and I was quite happy with sales at the time, so I might have been a bit bullshit.
A bit buoyant. Yeah, yeah. Good. Buoyant.
I was having a good day.
Yeah, that was a good little con, actually, that Bristol one. Good fun.
Bristol one's one of the best ones, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you and I have been muckers for a good number of years, and we've collaborated on a couple of things as well. We've had a bit of fun with the Silver Surfer comic, haven't we?
We
did something for the Nottingham charity comic.
Yes.
And the one that I was reminded of that I'd forgotten all about was I wrote a thing about British comic shops, and you illustrated it for the Down the Tubes. Do you remember that?
I do. I enjoyed doing those, actually.
Yeah, that was quite funny. You kept putting little Easter eggs in. That did make me laugh. Yeah, very good. But we're not going to talk about our long-standing friendship. We're going to talk more about what you've got coming up, dude. So you very kindly sent me Shaman Kane issue 6 today on a Dropbox link, and I spent my lunchtime reading it. Mate, and I said this before we come on, so you know I'm not blowing smoke up your arse just for pure sake of the interview, but, mate, you've levelled up again on that one, man. It's looking great.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard. Well, as you know, Tony, I mean, having...
No, I'm just a writer, mate. I can write things on the train. I'm not one of the hard-working artists that we hear about. You're a hard worker. Because you draw, you pencil, ink, and colour, and letter your own stuff, don't you, as well? And write it. And write, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough one to do. It takes a long time, and I think I've been slowly trying to level up my writing as well. So
yeah, it shows, man. It's good. You've got a real deep history and sort of legend status now of the little universe you're working in there. Did you want to just, for anyone who hasn't heard about Shaman Kane, did you want to just talk a little bit about who he is and the group that's sort of grown around him, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. So Shaman Kane's like a science fiction horror.
Yeah.
He's not really a bounty hunter. He actually belongs to an order, the shamanic order.
Yep.
And they're sort of like the police or the guardians of sentient beings everywhere against supernatural entities that may harm living beings, and like ghosts, zombies, werewolves, etc., etc.
Yeah.
And so Shaman Kane's sort of like set in the future. I'm very non-specific about it. Yeah. And he's basically the order are trying to keep, as I just said, the supernatural entities from killing citizens in, you know, around the galaxy. And they just sort of, everybody's just sort of come out of a big zombie war like a few years hence. And Shaman Kane sort of starts off with some short stories introducing you to the world, ghosts, you know, and the zombies and things. And then as time goes on, you find out that there's something else going on as well.
Good. And you've added to the cast as you've gone along, haven't you? I think it's fair to say we get recurring characters and stuff like that. Now, I'm going to say there's a little nod to 2000 AD in tone, isn't there? I know you're a Prog 1 guy. Is there a little nod to 2000 AD there somewhere?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I, you know, like 2000 AD has been my mainstay ever since I started reading comics, really. I mean, you know... I'm a Prog 1, so I started reading it in 77. I was reading comics before that, but 2000 AD was the, you know, Valiant,
yeah,
Countdown, things like that, you know, a few American comics. But 2000 AD was the one that really resonated with me. Dan Dare really sucked me in, you know, like the advert for Dan Dare. I was a big Dan Dare fan.
Yeah.
That got me.
The Dan Dare in 2000 AD doesn't get enough credit for being fucking a bit crazy. it's a good strip into it, especially when Gibbons and Ballardinelli and people like that had a hold of it. I think it's a great strip.
Yeah, I think I was of the age that I think if I'd been sort of like a reader of the Eagles, I might have sort of thumbed my nose at it a little
bit.
But I'd been sort of reading the annuals and whatever Eagles I could get hold of up until that point. And I loved Dan Dare because there was nothing else like it out there. And I was probably one of the only kids at the time that was really into science fiction.
Okay.
Like science fiction, anything geeky, you know, you had to be a bit quiet at school and things like that. You know, if you weren't into football or something like that, you had to sort of, you know, sort of.
Oh, I kept the fact that I read comics a secret for many years, my friend, from many groups of people.
Very wise. Yeah. Not so much now. But
now we're the coolness now, aren't we? We can finally come out of the closet, the comics closet, and announce ourselves to the world. But yeah, we did keep it a little bit on the down low, didn't we, sometimes back then?
We did, yeah. I mean, Star Wars helped a bit when it came out.
Yeah, that's true.
Suddenly a little bit cooler. But yeah, so when I saw Dan Dare in the prog on the advert on telly, I was just like, oh, you know, and I was of the age that I could accept the complete change from the very stiff upper lip sort of like Colonel or whatever, Colonel Dare from the Eagle, to the sort of more anti-hero, you know, Dan Dare of 2000 AD.
There was a touch of the psychedelics occasionally in that, wasn't there? It was kind of scary, wasn't it? A bit more than I was used to. Yeah.
I mean, I got Prog 1. And then, unfortunately, due to the normal things that used to happen with news agents in the 70s, I didn't get 2008D again until Prog 4.
Right.
And it was just as Dan Dare was landing this ship on Jupiter, and they got to meet the Biogs, which are these aliens, fantastic creatures drawn by Bernardinelli. It was just incredible. I mean, the battle around Jupiter between both, you know, the Sasa, Dan Dare's Starfleet.
Yeah, oh man, I love that. I bought the hardbacks of that. I love them. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Right, stop talking about other people's comics, Dave. I know what you like. Let's go back. So do you think there's a little touch of the Ballardinellis in your work? I can see there's that, because he draws some like beasts, doesn't he? He draws some imaginative beasts, Ballardinelli, and I can see some of your there's sort of creatures that turn up in this and in Slaughterhawk, which I like to think of as your sort of your crisis almost. I don't mean personal crisis. Yeah. I mean your comic. It's your comic equivalent of the comic crisis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But so do you think was he an influence, Ballardinelli? Do you think or
Oh, I think so, yeah. I mean, I've always been... I really did like Bernardinelli's work, and I think I'll... I must admit, I did like it more when Dave Gibbons took over.
Very clean, wasn't it? Yeah, it was lovely work.
Yeah, and it had more of a sort of official sort of like NASA or a SASA. Okay. Like it was more regimental in the sense that it actually looked like it was a bit more military, whereas the Bernardinelli design was, as I say, very cosmic, very psychedelic. But again, I really like that as well. I mean, I loved the space uniforms, but I think my style sort of I was always more drawn towards the Dave Gibbons, Cam Kennedy,
Steve Dillon, maybe a little there.
Yeah, yeah. Steve Dillon, you know, all of those. Bernardinelli's in there, but I'd say more as more. I really wanted to emulate Dave Gibbons and people like that, and Cam Kennedy and Dillon.
There's a few good examples there, isn't there? Definitely, yeah, drawing examples. Yeah. Now, so issue 6 is it out? Is it?
It is, yeah, and it's right. Available from my Comixy website or contacting me directly.
Okay, fine, good. And you just told me that you're scripting 7 at the moment. Is that right?
Yes, yeah, 7's finished. Layouts, very rough stick layouts are finished as well. So in about a couple of weeks' time, when I've got a few other things out of the way, I'm going to start going at that to get it done. So yeah, it's going to be there's a lot of work. There's at least 400 to 500 hours of work goes into it.
Nice, cool. Now it's something of an anniversary for you, isn't it? Really, it's because I know over Christmas you posted that it had been 10 years since you started drawing for 2000 AD fanzines, so Czar Jazz and Dog Breath. How did that come about, dude?
When I decided that I wanted to try and get back into, you know, trying to get into 2000 AD and submit stuff, artwork to them, I thought, well, I'll try with the fanzines first.
Yeah, it's quite a common tactic, isn't it, for people? They do come up through them, don't they, sometimes?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the good thing about it was, is to be honest, I hadn't really drawn anybody else's scripts before.
Okay. And
so I'd written my own story, a 5-pager Judge Dredd story based on a character called Judge Sladek. From around the Prog 400, somewhere along those lines.
Okay.
And I'd done like a follow-on story from that, and I sent it off to Dave Evans, Bolt 01, the editor.
He's a good lad, isn't he?
He's a great bloke, and he's a brilliant editor as well.
Yeah.
And he got back to me and said they were interested in it, and I just thought, oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
You know. And not in an arrogant way, but I thought, well, that was easier than I thought. And so it got published. It took from me sending that, it wasn't published for about a year, because obviously the wheels of industry move very, very slowly in small press. Can take a long time, and they have a lot of people submitting stuff.
Yeah, I've been in there a few times. I do enjoy it. It's one you can send off, and then a couple of comic conventions down the line, they go, oh, we used your one, by the way, and you go, oh, nice. It's like that.
They're really great. And it's a case of, so that one got published, but I then tried to send them something else, and I said, well, the first one was okay, but you know, there's a few things with this one. And I said, right, what we'd like to try and do is send, you know, if you'd work on a script that we've got.
Okay.
So of course I was a little bit taken aback to start off with. You know, I didn't say anything, you know, but I sort of like, and then I thought, no, this would actually be a really good learning curve for me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, man. A lot of it, is that how you found it? Working off other people's scripts, did it push you to draw stuff perhaps you wouldn't have maybe drawn otherwise?
I think definitely. Yeah. I think definitely. And the other thing is because, of course, a lot of the script writers you're working with are like, they're all fans.
Yeah.
A majority of them are fans of 2000 AD. And obviously they're in the same situation as you. They're learning their trade, and or their wannabe trade, you know, what they want to be. And it's a case of, so you've got these scripts, and Dave and Richmond and now Owen, it was the Emperor at the time, who were doing the editorial stuff, all do a really good job. They all take it really seriously. Not to the extent that it's not fun, but, you know, they take it seriously. So they'll treat any script coming in pretty much the same way as, you know, as far as I can tell, as you would do in a normal magazine.
It's good practice, man. It really is.
I think it is. I know that they sometimes get some stick from people for it, but the thing is if you can't take it, you're not going to survive in the real world.
You're not going to survive Matt Smith when he tells you to redo it and stuff like that in the actual prog, are you, I suppose? Yeah,
absolutely.
Now you've done. I think I'm right in saying I read that you've done 32 stories in 10 years for those guys.
Yes, I think 31 have been published, and the 32. I'm waiting to hear back from them to see if there's any changes to do to it.
Is that the Kev Hopgood Dread story? Is it?
That was the last one. So the one that I've just done is by a guy called Matt Sharp, and I've worked with him a number of times, and that's yet to be published. But Dave's got to get back to me. Dave Evans has got to get back to me yet to say whether it's okay or whether there's any changes needed.
Brilliant. So you've got a couple of strings to your bow, because I know Shaman Kane's is kind of an ongoing thing that you work on. You work on Zarjez as well. You do the odd thing with other people and the odd thing on your own. But Slaughterhawk 2, is that in the works?
I'm putting Slaughterhawk 2 on the hold for a moment. It's not going to be finished. I'm going to finish it.
Right.
I'm going to do it, but I've decided I really there's renewed interest in Shaman Kane.
Yeah.
I've got some.
You get some good buzz, man. That it's a comic that I've consistently over the course of the podcast and reviewing stuff. I always hear people mention it. So that's a good sort of 6 years of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's really good to know, and I think I'm getting a real hardcore of fans there now. It's still obviously in small press terms, you know, so it's, you know, still a small group, but everybody is starting to read it. I mean, newcomers that I get reading it now are basically just saying they're hooked, and obviously I'm going to say this sort of stuff, but it's really humbling because people are actually sort of really they can't wait to read the next one.
Yeah, man, I think you've got the right idea there. You've kept it consistent. It's you writing. It's got the same characters. It's got that 2000 AD
vibe.
Yeah, it has. And people dig that, don't they? And there's a good groundswell still in this country of 2000 AD fans who will support stuff like that and will look for it, seek it out and read it and enjoy it. Yeah, I think that's great. What else you got on the go? What else you got on the bubble at the moment, man?
It's pretty much just a Shaman Kane. I've deliberately not taken on anything else yet, because I basically want to do the Shaman Kane thing, and I want to try and get book eight out today as well, this year as well.
Oh right, okay. So that'd be what, three issues? Would it be, well,
two issues again this year?
Okay, cool. Yeah,
but I'm thinking about pitching to a couple of magazines,
right?
A couple of the independents that are out, and I'm trying a new art style.
Oh, okay.
So it's time. I've at the moment I'm sort of taking a lot of time off of art duties this month, so as I'm hoping to get a couple of scripts done. So I want to get the script done for 7-8 right. of Shane Kane.
Same format again, same American comic book size format, or
yeah, absolutely the same.
Yeah.
US format, about 24 to 28 pages.
Nice.
Not in cover, full color.
One story in each issue, because I know you've mucked about. You've fiddled about with having shorter stories sometimes, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I did that in the beginning, and I think that was really to get me into the writing process.
Okay.
I was following also, some people have noticed it as well, but 2000 AD readers have noted, but the first issues of Kane, I was trying to sort of almost do it like an early 2000 AD prog, you know, with black, with black and white stories and then some colour in the centre.
And that's cool.
A lot of people, some of the younger audience, I'd say, that were picking it up were saying, oh, it's a bit weird, you know, it's an anthology, but it really needs to be a one full story. Yeah. And of course, they would have been the readers that probably hadn't have got into 2000 AD in the 70s, you know.
I suppose the format speaks to the one story, doesn't it, as well? People pick up an issue like that, they expect maybe it to be, because it's American format, isn't it, you know.
You're right, and I decided to listen to them a little bit. And I thought, as I was starting to get a bit more of a handle on the writing, that I felt that I could actually do longer stories.
Great, good stuff, man. Well, listen, Dave is the consummate professional, as I just told him before we started recording. He is a guy I've long said should be working in the prog by now. And plus I keep telling him his colouring chops are up there, and Dave keeps saying he finds colouring boring. But I think you certainly, mate, that's the colouring on this new issue is brilliant. Best I've seen you do. And the story is dense and exciting and full of personality and full of quite fun violence, I'm going to say. It's a lot of bloodletting in it, isn't there? You know, there's spears going through creatures and...
Wait until you see issue 7, mate.
Good.
Wait until you see what I've got in store.
Good stuff, man. So where can people find you? Where can people find your books?
Okay, mate. Well, I didn't write it down, so I've just got to get my glasses on. And they can contact me on my email, which is dbroughton@hotmail.co.uk.
So that's D and then B-R-O-U-G-H-T-O-N. D Broughton.
That's the one.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the one.
Cool.
I'm on. You can get to me on Twitter, and that's @dbroughton. That's capital D, lowercase Broughton, capital D for David.
Okay.
So cool. That's Facebook. I'll have to change that one day. I'm on Comixy, and unfortunately, I haven't actually got the address here. But it's just if you go on the Comixy website, comic book website, and put David Broughton in there, you'll find my site easy.
No worries, man. We'll put it in the show notes for people who are listening this week. Yeah, so you'll be able to click on it for that. And what's left in the stock cupboard? So I'm guessing you got issue 6 still. Have you got any of the previous issues left?
Yes, I've got to get a few previous issues. 4's running out.
Right.
1 or 2 are on their second prints.
Cool.
I'm basically stocked on all of them.
So they're still available, but they get them while they're hot, sort of thing. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And Slaughterhawk, is that still available?
Slaughterhawk is available. That's coming towards the end as well. So I have the stock that I have. I'd just like to say that I'm doing a deal with Shaman Kane at the moment.
Okay.
So normally each issue is £4, but if you buy all 6, you can get them instead of £24 for £18.
Oh, that's good, man. That's a good deal.
That does include post, but it's knocked £6 off of the whole price.
That's good, man. Good stuff. Excellent. Thank you, Dave. Always a pleasure, mate. And hopefully we'll see you at a comic convention when the world opens up again.
Oh, I look forward to that, Tony. It's always good chatting, mate.
Yeah, good stuff. And I'll say goodbye now, and we'll continue chatting after I press stop. Thanks, man.
All the best, mate.
2 bits of interview audio in one show.
Not bad, is it?
Madness.
Boom.
The,
yeah.
I tell you what, the value for money that you get on this free audio podcast is. but no, thank you to Dave for chatting.
Yeah, it's always good chatting to Dave.
And we've got a little bit of a giveaway.
Yeah, so he's given us a couple of comics. So I've got issue 5 and 6 here to give away to the first person who contacts us with the answer to the question is, who does Shaman Kane work for? So if I think, let's face it, if you looked at Dave's website, you could probably find out. Who does Shaman Kane work for? First person past the gate, I'll send them these two comics. There you go.
There you go. So there you go. Send us in. I mean, how should they do it? On the...
Yeah, on the email, or they can send it on the Twitter or the Facebook, replying to the post that you'll put up tomorrow for this going live. Yeah. Do that, can you?
You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com or DM us at the awesome pod.
Yeah.
That's good.
And DMs are probably better because sometimes I forget to check the inbox and all of a sudden we're bursting at the seams with comics. DM us on Twitter.
Cool.
And speaking of free comics, to more comics, because we're going to recommend some stuff to you lovely people. It's that time of the show where I add to the show notes every week. but who would like to go first?
There's one of you two want to go. You just heard me for 10 minutes, haven't you?
Oh, happy go.
Go, cool. Go on, Dan.
I was given this book as a gift for my birthday back in July, and I've only just got around to reading it. I'm trying to crank through the huge pile of comics and trades I've got lined up, and this is Silver Surfer Black by Donny Cates, Trad Moore and Dave Stewart, and it's the oversized Treasury edition. Would that what you call it, Tony?
That's what I reckon. It's slightly thinner than a Treasury. Did I get you this? I can't remember.
It's been such a long time ago. It's fucking great. It's like I don't really get too much of what's going on with the story.
You mean either, yeah, but it looks amazing.
I'm like, what? But like Trad Moore, the kind of the energy and athleticism and just everything he puts into the panels, it's like there's movement and speed, but it I don't know how he does it. It's just so well done.
I like people who make Surfer their own. So Kirby Buxima did it, didn't they? Even Ron Lim did his own version, didn't he?
Yeah.
But this, he's really captured something in the sort of fluid metal look to him, hasn't he? There's a frailness but a power to him that all at once, which is great.
Yeah, I don't like kind of like when he's too bulky, that kind of like wiry person. But then the kind of the back of his skull is slightly larger and elongated, so it gives him that alien look.
Yeah,
like the what race is of people did Norrin Rad?
Is it Zenlar? Is it? I can't think of the name.
That's the planet, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're called.
But he looks not bang on human, and I think that's kind of like a real good move. But
yeah,
it's just so great, like the way Tradmore does the ego, the living planet, and rather than have like just a face on the planet, he's got these kind of features, but then two kind of planetoid orbs that float in front of where his eye holes are. To denote where he's looking, and just everything's so bizarre and crazy.
Fucking the alien environments in this are like nothing else. You wouldn't even find them in like heavy metal back in the day. There's like this sort of weird space starfish thing going on. The planets are all eco cities, and at one point he's flying like a silver snake. At one point, it's just incredible.
It's balmy. It really is. Essentially, it carries on. It starts off from a story, I think, that's set in the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they will get sucked into a black hole. And essentially the Surfer's lost in this black hole and tries to get his way out. And he comes across all these kind of foes and adversaries he's never met before. And part of his army is kind of corrupted with this black hole. And it ends up the story. He comes out, but he's now, instead of silver, he's completely black, like a kind of shiny black. I'm not sure where that story goes because I've only got like this one snippet, this one trade.
Yeah. Well, this is a standalone series, isn't it? It does go elsewhere, but
there's one sequence where there's like kind of Surfers, it's a double page spread, and Surfers at the bottom of the page, and Trad, I'm just trying to find it, but Trad Moore's like got Galactus standing over him.
Oh yeah, I've got that in front of me, all in red and fire, and
yeah, and it kind of like the perspective on it is just so well done. He kind of get the weight and the energy of the power of what Galactus can kind of bring up. I don't know, I have to find it maybe and put it in the group, because such a fantastic image. The whole book is just nuts. And like I said, Tony, you kind of got the white silver of the Surfer framed against all these colors, and he's really easy to pick out and read. But just, yeah, oh, it's fantastic. Absolutely lovely.
I've just sent it through to you guys, that thing on the WhatsApp, so you can see
that
it.
That spread.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. And he makes Galactus his own there, isn't it? It isn't Kirby, and it isn't Joe Sinner, and it isn't... It's just something else entirely.
I don't know why, like... Oh, I'm not... shouldn't really go to the films. Why they shy away from that Galactus with that helmet on. Because it fucking looks great.
I love that Hercules miniseries where the only way he could defeat him was he just drank him under the table. And in that, this is one of the few times he takes his helmet off, isn't it? It looks great. Yeah, it's really interesting. Okay.
He, in that kind of book, he gets the opportunity, because it kind of goes back to the beginning of time or something, and he has the opportunity to stop Galactus before he's born, and makes a decision. It's the first time Galactus has been pushed into the Marvel 616 universe before he's got this hunger, but he can feel it coming on. And the Surfer sort of tussles whether he should kill Galactus
there
or let him carry on. I can't recall reading tons of Donny Cates stuff. How was he considered?
No, good, yeah. Yeah, he's considered. Yeah. His Thor. His Thor kind of has lots of elements of this in it, the recent run of Thor, because Thor becomes the Herald of Galactus.
Okay. Oh, nice one.
That's and it's well done. So it's not.
I was a big
exactly
fan of his indie work, sort of like Baby Teeth and a Tomahawk, which also this... had some sort of mental, sort of like over the top, psychedelic metal cover, album stuff. And this, from what I've seen of this Silver Surfer one, it is very much sort of like a.
His Star Trek stuff's all right. I met him when he did that, and he was signing at the IDW at New York a few years ago, and that was good as well. It was all right.
I mean, he certainly gets the Surfer, the sort of the introspection and kind of like the almost not loathing, but the kind of how
there's
would you
a
describe
tragic quality
it? Yeah, there's a tragic quality to the Surfer, and he's constantly like regretting what he's done in the past, and he does reflect. There's a sequence where he reflects on looking over these worlds as Galactus destroyed them and the different ways they reacted, and he still. Kind of not, I don't want to kind of cheapen it by saying like PTSD, but he kind of harbors regrets over it, and he can't forget what he's done.
I think that's as much as I like Michael Ridden and the one Dan Slott he wrote with him. The fact that he had a companion, it was just too Doctor Who to me. I want the Surfer to be this lone character, and it just didn't quite sit well with me.
It's absolutely like one character in the black on his own.
Yeah.
And he's just, It's kind of like a Zen-like kind of quality to him.
He's given himself over to save his planet. There's a sort of, it's almost like a Buddhist monk element to him, isn't there?
Yeah.
In a little bit of a way, yeah. Did you see that spread, V?
Oh, yeah, God, yeah. It's just Tradmore being Tradmore, a.k.a. one of the best. Simple as that.
It's great, isn't it? Really good. Yeah.
It's a bit of an aside, but like kind of it is a massive aside. I won't go down that thing, but it is with like zen-like masters and kung fu masters. For me, like in Star Wars, that's what the Jedi is supposed to be, but they never seem to be portrayed as that kind of like these wise, all-knowing people that don't really get into rucks that often. But now
they were sort of samurais, weren't they?
Yeah, jumping around and fucking blasting people up. But anyway, that's a side note.
Yeah, I definitely need to read this at some point in the future.
Yeah, it's a nice the way it's presented, mate, the way it's packaged, is sort of this oversized book's really nice.
Lovely. Okay, shall I go next?
Yeah.
I've got a book that I've done quite a bit of comics reading. After like not reading so much recently, I sort of had a weekend of reading lots of comics, and this is the first one that I mentioned to the guys when I said, I'm going to recommend this, and then I read another five comics that I can quite easily recommend as well, so expect to hear more about them in the next couple of weeks. but I went from one from Aftershock Comics, written by David Popose, who wrote another title that I absolutely love, which is Going to the Chapel, which is a sort of
Was that Action Lab?
Yeah, I think it might have been. Yeah, I think it was Action Lab. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's also written Spencer and Locke, which I know Ringo Award nominated. That's another one I need to read at some point. And the artist is Luca Casalanguida, coloured by Matt Miller, covered by Andy Clark and Jose Villarubia, lettered by Carlos M. Manguel. This is issue one of Scout's Honor, which is a post-apocalyptic title, but one with a novel sort of premise. Years after a nuclear apocalypse, a new society has risen from the ashes, and their Bible is an old Ranger Scout manual. A young Ranger Scout named Kit has endured the harsh survivalist upbringing needed to conquer the irradiated Colorado Badlands. But after discovering a terrible secret once lost to history, Kit must risk everything on a dangerous quest to uncover the truth behind the Ranger Scout's doctrine. I'm not always one for post-apocalyptic, especially nuclear apocalyptic stories. But this whole sort of, and the cover itself is straight up, like, you have a young Ranger Scout, sort of a kid, and there's a statue holding, like, the rules for basically the Scouts, basically. Cub Scouts sort of thing. You know, a Scout must always be prepared. A Scout's duty is to protect others. There's all these sort of rules. But in a post-apocalyptic society, they've taken this as the, not the New World Order, but this is the way you should do things. And I thought that was a novel sort of way. You know, it didn't also look like a nuclear holocaust book where everyone was in like huge sort of hazmat suits and stuff. So I was intrigued by it, and I tell you what, this is a great first issue as well. Quite a lot goes on. It starts off with a group of people essentially opening up the doors of the bunker. That's how it starts. They talk about how the oxygen is finally breathable and the radiation's down. And it says this, I haven't done the maths on how many years this is. But it says 9,562 days since the bombs fell. It's time to see the world they left us. I don't know how many years that is, but that sounds like quite a few years. basically there's a group of, and you see when these people arrive in the bunker, they've got like the gas masks and they look like, you know, your classic sort of, you know, beards, and they look like rough sort of, you know, your Fallout kind of survivalists, and they have in their hands a Ranger Scout survival manual. It then jumps forward 260 years later, and that's the story that we're picking up. Which is, and then when you see them, it's when you first see the Ranger Scouts, they're sort of younger kids. They do seem that, and they're collecting badges based on how they survive, like by hot wiring a car. They get certain, you know, they can earn certain badges, or by, you know, being bravery or being good with explosives, they get other badges as well. And there's mutated sort of animals in these wild lands that they have to try and survive. It's a brutal, harsh landscape, but I don't know, it just with a real nice sort of twist. It's done very, very well. There is a mystery that is played out. Although I've read that synopsis, I did not read the synopsis when I bought this book. I like the cover.
I never read the bloody synopsis. No. I always just look at the pages, don't you?
You've got to be careful as well, because what I read there gives out a couple of things that I didn't know going into it. So I was just, as I always say, just discover the book for yourself. Thankfully, there is a big twist in this book that happens about two-thirds of the way through the book. And for other comics, that might have been the end of the issue. You know, the big sort of like, oh my word, there's even a splash page when a moment is revealed. But no, then you've got like another 10 more pages of story and action, which then lead into the big cliffhanger, which is very well done. There's lots of sci-fi going on. There's, you know, strange technology. It's a survival book as well. But that whole sort of... you know, that intrigue, you know, the Ranger Scouts aren't just sort of like, you know, dib, dib, dob, dob, I can build a fire. These are like, you know, the best of the best kind of things. They're not army soldiers. They still have like uniforms and stuff like the Scouts do. And I'm very interested to see how this plays out. I mean, I usually Aftershock put out some great books.
We've talked about quite a few of them, haven't we?
This
Dark Ark is great. That was a great series.
Yeah, I love that series. I haven't read the sequel for that yet.
I've got it and haven't read it. And there was a free comic book day one as well, wasn't there, of it, that links them, I think. But Brothers Dracul is good as well. That's a great book.
And this seems like Scouts Honor is another one to add to your list, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. I highly recommend it, especially, I know post-apocalyptic is a genre that is quite popular with a lot of people.
I don't mind it. I quite enjoy it.
I think
if you find that, if you catch them at the, you know, the, those things that we used to have called cons, I think they do, like Valiant, do they do a 3 books for the price of 2 deal?
Nice.
Which is worth it,
Nice one.
Yeah, I do love Aftershock's work, and that, you know. And David Popozzi, I hope I'm getting that right, is a great writer. I think it's definitely understands dialogue, and the pacing of this book is done really well, and the way that the sort of reveals and the cliffhanger moments are played out are brilliantly done. You know, and it's definitely one to check out for. Scouts Honor, it's another one that I'm just going to be adding to my you know, I don't think I'm going to have a huge list of books that I'm going to buy every new issue. Do you know what I mean?
Do you subscribe to things on
I have done before, but
yeah, I have done. Yeah,
I did it once with I think Outer Darkness I subscribed, and then for some reason Comixology sort of, I don't know, it had a bit of a fit and then unsubscribed me, so I didn't get
it. Oh, right.
I had to go and
Which kind of Ronin Island, and it's quite nice, because the main reason I realise I've got it is because you get an email saying, oh, thanks for paying. I'm like, why is that?
I think I might do that for the titles like this, and like Homesick Pilots and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, there's just going to be a couple of titles that I'd be interested to keep going. Certainly for the first arc, I think it's worth doing that. If the first issue impresses you enough, I think two more issues, you kind of get the feel of how you feel about a book in some way. Do you think by issue three?
They're normally limited, aren't they? Their series, normally.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, certainly they do that 6-issue arc sort of model, don't they?
Like
a lot of books do.
Yeah.
And this feels like there could be a bigger story playing out, but if it's just one trade, I'm in for it. But so Scouts Honor issue 1, check it out. The second one's out in February, so I don't want to give too much away, because I did. The big reveal halfway through, it was one of those rare it's that. and it says a lot to the way the story was told and how the art is handled that sort of moment worked so well. So top marks to everyone involved in this book. I thought it was great. So, and that's
good
my
stuff,
one.
Man. Nice. Good stuff. I'll do the last one then. Strangers issue 4. I got through. I love this so much. It so fits into what I'm into. Published by our buddy Eddie Raymond. It was, if you go back, what, 4 episodes, something like that? He was on the show, wasn't he?
Yeah.
This is the fourth one, and I'm guessing it's the longest. It feels like the chunkiest of them all. I may be wrong, but it feels that way. The cover is by a guy called Tom Neely. Now, if you don't know Tom, you really need to look his stuff up. He does a book with Keenan Marshall Keller. It's a bike comic called The Humans. And this is a character from that series, and he's sort of perusing an old school comics rack, you know, full of, it says, for losers, misfits and scumbags comic magazines. That's what it says on it, and it says what a beautiful gory layout. And so I got that, and I thought, that's cool, because I like that comic. And I sort of got it, you know, took it out of the envelope. Couple of days of it sitting on my desk at work, I thought, I've got 5 minutes, I'm going to read this. And then as I was sort of scanning the titles on the cover, you get stuff that is genuine. So Cancor's on there, Headlopper, the Auteur, there's comics, there's some that are made up. There's one called Sad Dad, which made me laugh. Megan Mogg's on there, D. So there's actual genuine comics on there. And I thought, these are genuine comics, that's cool. No, as I scanned over, I saw Fante Bukowski, which I really like as a comic. I looked down, fucking hell, Atomic Hercules, look at that on the cover. And immediately sent a picture of it to you guys and to Falpy.
Yeah.
And we were like, that's like the best thing ever. We're so excited. We were so excited by that. Now, the cover is obviously the feature for that issue is an interview with Tom and Keenan inside about the third volume of The Humans, which is called, I think it's called Welcome to the Jungle. Welcome to the Jungle, yeah. But what you get in the comic bag along with it, you get an Ashcan comic of the first sort of 8 pages or something of the new series. And it, for those that haven't read it, it's a... imagine Sons of Anarchy if it was set in 1970s.
Jesus.
And but everyone in it is a simian. So there's chimpanzees, gorillas, all this sort of thing, and they're all in a motorbike gang. Now imagine if the comic was so violent that it made Sons of Anarchy look like Emmerdale, and you're around the right spot. So even the cover to this little ashcan has got someone cutting someone's head off with a cutlass, a biker with a sort of Nazi helmet who's a gorilla. You've got someone being pulled apart by 2 motorcycles and split in half and all his entrails hanging out. You've got someone blowing the brains out of a female member of the gang. It's full on. It looks like Kirby drew it and Tim Vigil inked it. That's how it looks to me. It's just brilliant. It's like a wraparound cover, and inside the gang are all in prison, and I won't spoil it, but it's that's what it is. I mean, after being totally humbled by the fact we're on the cover, then it's this in there. It just makes it such a great package. So also you get in the issue, you get loads of other, like absolutely loads of stuff in there. There's it's like an interview with them, but it includes photographs. So Tom and Keenan. But you also, there's a thing on One Bad Rap, which I must have to say is like a... Have you guys read One Bad Rap by Brian Talbot? Have you ever read that?
No. It's one of those ones that it's always on a list, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I think it's not talked about enough, because it's... Brian had come off books like Luther Arkwright, and he did this, and it's quite a sort of sensitive tale of it's like a Beatrix, I suppose they call it a modern fantasy, don't they, or something now, about a kid that's been abused and ran away to London and living in the streets of London in the 80s. And it's quite a book, and there's a piece on that. There's a strip that is a reworking of Mr. Miracle and Big Barda, and they meet Clary and the Witch Boy, and it's done in black and white, and it's totally underground and completely unauthorized, I'm sure, but it's just fucking joyous to read. Falpy's got a strip in there, actually, called Jungle Land, which is... Has anyone seen Bronx Warriors? Anyone seen that movie?
Yeah.
It's that turned up. just machine gunning each other, and it's sort of a gangster thing, and it's done with... I have to say, we were talking about it on the Drink and Draw, weren't we, the other day? But there's some of Falpy's best work, actually. Really heavy inks, but done really well. And I think it really suits the black and white, the way he was working on it. So some of the best stuff I've seen of him so far. There's Ben Mara does this. Now, this is right up our street. Ben Mara, who we're a big fan of, does a double page spread called It Came From the Dollar Bin. And this is he does one in each issue where he just like talks about shit he finds in dollar bins, you know, which is the sort of thing that we do. You know. Nate Garcia, just this really strange artist, really underground feel. You know, it could have been in Weirdo magazine. Does this whole one-page, four-panel story about what shoes cowboys wear and why they wear them. There's 4 pages of reviews, all done by Eddie, actually, of some comics. And I have to say, I've ordered at least 3 or 4 of them off this review page. There's some really interesting stuff on there. And then last but not least, I mean, there's loads of other stuff in there. This is just, it's chocked full of stuff. But last but not least is there's an interview with Matt Lesniewski, I'm going to say his name is, and he's the creator of a book called The Freak. Has anyone seen this?
No.
I think you will have done. I think I've sent you a couple of Instagram links for his stuff. I think one he did, Deadlock, I might have sent you. Deathlock, sorry. And it's he's got this really weird style about him. It's just genuine.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I know.
Just everyone's sort of bent over, but there's a fluid nastiness to them, and just just insanity. He just takes these characters and he does things with them, and no one's thought of before. And he's a really interesting guy. And I think I know he's doing some work with Dark Horse now. I think with Matt Kint off the top of my head. Which is going to be really interesting. I think he's a really, really genuinely is someone you need to watch. Every time Strangers come out, I'm literally messaging Eddie saying, when's the next issue out, dude? When can I order it? You know, it's like that. And me and Falpy, we're all over this. It's just absolutely brilliant. I have to say, I do have a horse in this race. I'd like to declare that Eddie is also obviously the guy that distributes Atomic Hercules in the States for us, and we love him for it. And but as you know, if you listen to the episode, he's got an absolute love for this out there, yeah. You know, indie, underground feeling comic. And we're discovering comics that you wouldn't otherwise. And there's none of that like, oh, I miss my boyfriend comics. This is like full on fucking goes for it nuts comics. And this is the edge I want to live on. This is the experimentation I want to see in comics. Just brilliant. The way to get it is you can go to www.strangersfanzine.bigcartel.com and you can buy it. There's a couple of other things on there. He reps for a couple of other creators. There's some t-shirts on there and stuff, and you can get most of the back issues there. I know he's sold out of this issue, but it's about to go back to reprint, so you'll be able to get it. I know a couple of our buddies, I think Gary Hill's ordered it, Pete Dory went and ordered it. There's a lot of people who've sort of seen it and thought, oh, okay, now this is good. Yeah, I'm really pleased, because this is this and Bubbles are the two fanzines at the moment that really feel like the new thing, the next new thing. And I think we really, and he does have some, you can sell advertising to him. I know he does take some money for some advertising occasionally. But yes, it's definitely get on it. So strangersfanzine.bigcartel.com. There you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. The last show note of a whole bunch of amazing show notes this week.
Yeah.
Lots of comics for you all to kick off the new year and start off your shopping lists. All available digitally as well as physically. But yes, go forth and get loads of comics. Because I tell you what, comics are great.
Aren't they?
Yeah, man.
I fucking love them. I think about them every day. I was saying this to a mate the other night on Friday night. It's not a day goes by, I just don't think a lot about them. They're just brilliant.
Yeah. Comics.
Yeah, that's all I think about. Yeah.
And we wouldn't be here this many years or episodes afterwards if we didn't care about them. Or want you lovely people to discover some new fantastic books. So go forth, find out about the guests we talked about. Thank you to everyone that joined us this week. It's another great way to start the guests for the new year, for 2021. Long may it continue.
Yeah, and that's a nice little capture there, isn't it? Sean was great as well.
Yeah, and if there's anything about this week's episode you want us to talk, you know, want to find out more about, or if there's any events, or perhaps you've got some comics things lined up for 2021 that you want us to shout out about, because we will, because it is all about getting their word out there. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Get the competition answers in there as well. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we will be talking about all kinds and getting the word out, you know, retweeting this show, retweeting cool, nice, positive comic stuff that we're seeing out there, because that's what we need more of on social media. Positive comic sort of blah. I couldn't think of the word. You can tell I'm a writer.
Blah, I do. Blah's all right.
Yeah, I do. Blah. Yeah. Blah, blah. And if you want more blah, blah, you can go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And the wonderful place that is the Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk, which we talked about a little bit.
Have you seen the friend request, the follow, we've got on there at the moment?
Yes.
What's that all about?
I don't know. But they're not getting it because they.
It's only a joke. Me, you, and Tom, and
yeah.
I like it. The other day when we said to Tom, "Oh, we might add you as a moderator, Tom, because it helps with the drink and draw stuff." And Vince went, "Yeah, you can see all the nutters trying to get in the group."
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone, and I'm sure there's some people out there who are moderators or admins for Facebook groups. You know that as well as the good people that are part of your group, you just get some randoms. You're always going to get randoms.
It's the most random one I've seen for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the group itself is not random. The group is fantastic. It's a comics community right there, just talking about books. There's also, I think Dan's checked it out.
I've just seen it, yeah.
It's just comics talk, artwork, threads, all kinds of stuff going on there. So, yeah, get involved on that. That's Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. Thank you for listening to us. Whether it's on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, subscribe, and just get the word out about the show. And also, if we're on other networks, if you listen to us there, thank you very much. Whether it's on Amazon Music, Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're also in Pod. I'd really like to see you do better.
Topical. that's got me there.
But, you knew that was coming.
Yeah.
But Dan ruined it earlier because it wasn't going to be Pod Deadbeats, but he ruined it for me.
Yeah.
I bet, sorry.
There's definitely a podcast called Deadbeats of some kind, isn't there?
It's got to be in there.
Don't
do a Kickstarter.
But from speaking of Deadbeats, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
NeverIronAnything.com for all your comics reviews and podcast needs.
Yes.
I can't wait to see what goes up there next, Tony.
Thank you, mate. It's been a busy weekend.
You've said that before, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey. Hey.
I was talking about knobs at the time.
Oh. Oh, God.
Got turned into the skid, always.
Yeah. Good move.
if they're brave enough, where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com. And the next issue is launching on Wednesday the 27th of this month.
Hey.
So a couple of weeks.
We've seen it, man. Fucking hell.
Fucking hell. Stop taking the piss, Dan. You're making everyone else look bad.
There's more work went in that page than the whole comics I've reviewed this year.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Well, I hope I keep trying to like push myself and do better. So. Yeah.
Good work. It's good work.
I mean, it's terrifying what you're going to be capable of by the end of the year. So, and if you want to hear more of my waffle or artwork, or whatever, follow me on social media at Jester Diablo. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
I have to say, just can I interject there? I feel that all this red mask from Mars Loves love that's going on at the moment on Comic House, for example, and we've mentioned him a few weeks running now. I feel that there's another one coming. I feel that he must be playing a little bit on your noggin, dude.
there's a lot, a
little bit more in your head now, is he?
Yeah.
There's a little. Well, there's a lot playing on in my noggin.
Doug's trying to claw his way out.
It's in a strange place.
I think it was
a surprise when that sort of came up, and you know the realization that you know just because it's older work, it still gets discovered at some point, doesn't it? So
yeah
it's interesting. I know it is currently unfinished, the arc. It's in there somewhere. It's in there somewhere. It's going to be interesting over the next couple of years.
Life's unfinished, my friend. That's the thing.
That's deep.
That's how it works.
That's deep, isn't it, eh?
No one goes, when's EastEnders finishing, do they? They just they know it's ongoing.
God.
They just die before it does. It keeps going on and on.
Yeah.
Poor old Adam Wood,
I've got nothing left.
I always wondered if he's going to be
classic clip that. If you want to see, I mean, Ian Beale breaking down to Phil Mitchell. I don't even watch soap operas, but that's one of the funniest clips you'll ever watch.
I like that one where it's got 1 to 9 boxes and it says, what Phil Mitchell do you feel like today? And there's Phil Mitchell in all these different states, like angry, happy, pissed up. And
is it Cold War Steve? Is that the character?
Yeah.
He's always pissed or on crack or something in one of those, isn't he? Yeah.
Someone referred to him as an uncooked sausage in a shirt.
Oh, which is how you could describe any one of us. But anyway.
He did Aladdin at the local theatre.
God. No one was there to see it because of like current climate. Anyway. Thank you very much for listening, folks. Go forth and discover loads of indie books and continue making your wonderful comics. And stay safe and healthy because we love you. Thank you very much for listening from Dan, Tony and myself. Have a brilliant week. And what should they all do now, guys?
Stay awesome.
Oh, Dan, you lingered on it. Tony's got
it. No, he's doing that. It was very musical of him.
Yeah. I did actually fist bump. You didn't see that.
Yeah, I did too.
Fist bump fans.
I mean, you
fisting fans.
I must say, your genius is doing that on an audio medium.
Yeah. We were talking about that Silver Surfer spread.
Like fucking trying to ice skate uphill. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.
Back in the room.
Get in character.
No.
I need absolute science to get into character.
No dogs. No eye contact.
Yeah.